Listening Library presents The Last Book in the Universe by Rodman Philbrick. Chapter 1. They call me Spaz. If you're reading this, it must be 1,000 years from now, because nobody around here reads anymore. Why bother when you can just probe it? Put all the images and excitement right inside your brain and let it rip. There are all kinds of mind probes. Trendies, shooters, sexpos, whatever you want to experience. Shooters are violent, and trendies are about living in Eden. And sexpos, well, you can guess what sexpos are about. They say probing is better than anything. I wouldn't know because I've got this serious medical condition that means I'm allergic to electrode needles. Stick one of those in my brain and it'll kick off a really bad seizure, and then total mind melt, lights out, that's all, folks. They call me Spaz, which is kind of a mope name, but I don't mind, not anymore. I'm talking into an old voice writer program that prints out my words because I was there when the bully bangers went to wheel the writer for his sins, and I saw what they saw, and I heard what they heard. And it kind of turned my brain around. The bangers have the latch on my part of the herb, which means they control everybody and everything between Eastie and the pipe. 1 million people, maybe more. Nobody really knows how many, because nobody can count that high. Why bother? All you gotta know is, if you live here, you're either down with the bangers, or you might as well be dead. There's no escape. Because every part of the herb is latched by one gang or another. The only escape is Eden, and you can't get in there unless you're approved. And if you're genetically improved, you'd never leave in the first place. So forget about Eden. I used to belong to a family unit, with a foster mom and dad and my little sister Bean. But that's over, and I don't want to talk about what happened or how unfair it was. Not yet. The less said about that, the better. Because if there's one thing I learned from Ryder, it's that you can't always be looking backward or something will hit you from the front. Ryder was this gummy that changed my life. And if you're reading this, maybe you changed the world too. Gummies are what we call old people. And the Ryder was so ancient, the hair on his chin beard was as white as bone. And most of his teeth were gone. Even his skin was old and worn out and so thin, it looked like if you held him up to the light, you'd see right through him. The way I got to know Ryder is this. The banger sent me to bust him down. As far as I was concerned at the time, he was just another gummy scheduled for cancellation, so why not rip him off? And that's exactly what I did. Chapter 2. Stealing is my job. The stack box where Ryder lives is out at the edge, alongside of the pipe. The pipe is broken now, but in the back times, they say it carried billions of gallons of water into the herb, fresh, clean water that didn't have to be boiled and filtered before you drank it, water so pure you could swim in it without shriveling. I figure that's a made-up story, like a lot of the back-timer talk. In case you don't know, the back times were before the big shake, when everything supposedly was perfect and everybody lived rich. Personally, I doubt the back times ever existed. It's like a story you tell to make yourself feel better, that's all. The kind of story that starts with my real mom is a rich prove and my real dad is a latch boss and someday they'll rescue me and we'll all move to Eden and live happily ever after. Yeah, right. That only happens in the trendies. In real life, nobody comes to your rescue. Believe me, I know. Anyhow, the stacks. Nobody owns the stacks, and if you squat in one long enough, I guess you can call it home. If home is a little concrete box stacked 10 high in rows of 100. They say in the back times they used the boxes to store all the things they owned, but the only things stored there now are losers, assorted mopes and needle brains and gummies like the Ryder. You can smell the stacks before you see them, on account of there's no plumbing, and the boxers have to use the ground like animals. The strange thing is, at first glance, it looks like nobody lives there. Nearby is this old industrial warehouse that sort of caved in long ago, and the rusty beams and rubble are strewn around, which makes it hard to walk without tripping over stuff. I can hear the scratchy noise of rats scurrying out of my way, and when there's rats, the humans are sure to be close. But where are they? Hiding, it turns out. As I get closer, a small, smeary face peeks up from behind a pile of rubble, and then there's a whistle, a warning signal, and the noise of people scrambling to hide themselves like they're afraid of something. Me, probably. They assume I'm one of the bully bangers, come to bust them down or worse, which is pretty close to the truth even if I don't like to admit it. I'm not officially down with the bangers, but the gang boss, Billy Bismo, he sort of likes me for some reason. When he heard I lost my family unit, he said, make room for the spaz boy, and they did. So the deal is, I'm here to steal. Stealing is my job. It's how I stay alive. Either you pay tribute to the bangers, which means they get half of everything that sticks to your hands, or the bangers decide you're no longer among the living. Which makes things very simple, even if sometimes you feel sort of bad about ripping off people who are even poorer than you are. Steal or die, that's what it comes down to. Be a banger or be gone, as the saying goes. Anyhow, this little face pokes up again from the rubble and looks at me with big scared eyes, and I go, hey, don't move. And he freezes. The little face belongs to a little kid, maybe 5 years old, although he's got at least a million years worth of dirt on his cheeks. I bend down to look at him closer, and a tear cuts through the dirt, which makes me feel bad, even though I haven't hurt the little guy or ripped him off or anything. Not yet. Hey, I go, can you talk? Little face nods. Now there are two tears melting the dirt on his cheeks. Keeping my voice real low and gentle, I go, you want a chocs bar? All you gotta do, show me the way to Ryder's stack box. You know where he lives? I take the chocs bar from my pocket and unwrap it so he can see. But he looks even more scared. I break off half and give it to him and go, eat it. Come on, it ain't gonna kill ya. And he kind of flinches, and that's when I realize he's never had a chocs bar, and he thinks it might be poison. I break off another little piece and put it in my mouth and go, mmm, good. And finally he eats a piece and waits for it to explode. When the taste starts to hit him, all velvety chocolate, little face finally stops crying. Told you it was good, I say. Now what about the geese they call Ryder? Where can I find him, huh? Little face walks me through the rows of stack boxes. He doesn't say anything. He's too busy sucking the taste out of the chocs bar. Or maybe he's still too scared to talk. Whatever, when he gets to a certain row, he stops and just stands there. I go, is this it? Instead of saying yes, he runs away. One of the boxes on the lower row is open. Usually you have to bust down the door, which is why they call it a bust down, of course. But this place is wide open. Like the mope who lives there is saying, go ahead, rip me off. Which makes me think he could be waiting inside to cut my red and splash me. That's how you have to think, real cautious and paranoid, when you're on a bust down. Mostly the mopes don't dare fight back because of what the gang would do to them. But sometimes you get a suicidal mope, and then all bets are off. As it turns out, the mope is waiting inside, but he doesn't try to fight. He's this gummy with white, white hair and shiny eyes. That's the first thing I notice, how his eyes kind of light up from deep inside his head. He's wearing a loose, ragged tunic that's stitched together, made from even older rags, which means he's even poorer than most of the curb people. Hello, young man, he goes. Welcome to my humble abode. He's sitting behind this crummy old crate he uses as a desk, resting his chin on his hands and looking at me with those shiny old eyes. Real casual, like he couldn't care less about getting ripped off. Humble abode must be backtimer talk for stack box or crud hole or whatever, but I'm not there to flapjaw with some gummy old mope. I just want to get in, take whatever junk he's hoarding, and get out. That's when I noticed that all his stuff is lined up by the door, ready to go. I've been expecting you, he explains. Word gets around out here in the stacks. You are, I assume, an emissary from the bully bangers? I nod. Come on in, he says.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?